Hello, everybody. I am so sorry that I am late. Dina, let me know I am in the right place, if you will, please. I went in the panel to sign in and the meeting was gone. So, I have something on my face. Okay, there we go. So I was scrambling. So thank you, Dina, for reaching out to me on Facebook Messenger, because I would still be looking for it. So the meeting code, you might just want to tell Corinne, the 884 code is not sitting in upcoming meetings. I know Zoom did a big update last week and it sort of changed everything. So I am here and that was a little stressful. I'm not going to lie. I was like, oh my God, I got to get there. I got to be with my people and I couldn't find you guys. So all good. All good. Thank you for being with me here today. I am really excited. I'd love for you to say hi to me in the chat. If you guys want coaching, we'll get to you, Danielle, and then we'll grab some other people too. I am thrilled that you're all here. Jepdeet, welcome. So glad everybody's here. Who's new? Do we have a few people that were not here last time? I will just give you guys a little background on me. I'm Lisa Smith. I am a certified master parent coach. I have a 16-year-old son, and I grew up in a house full of yellers. I like to say if yelling were an Olympic sport, I would come from a dynasty of gold medalists. And I waited until I was in my late 30s to have a son, to have a child, and I birthed a very strong-willed boy. We call him a full contact sport. And I thought that I had done all the healing work. I thought that I was cured. I thought when I had a kid, you know, I had this amazing life and there wasn't yelling or anger or anxiety. And I thought, okay, this is going to be good. You've done your homework. You're good to go, Elise. And, you know, the meatloaf with eyes got to be about 2 or 3. And I found I was frustrated all the time. I was angry and reactive. And with my son, my husband and I were not on the same page. I felt like everybody else was doing it right and I couldn't figure out how to get there. And on top of that, when I was angry and reactive with my son, he was angry and reactive back. Who can relate to that? And the whole time I'm thinking to myself, where did he learn this? Who taught him to be this way? And then one day this voice came in the room and went, you're showing up this way and you're teaching him to be this way. And I was just like, oh my. So I immediately set about to find a new way to parent, to unparent the way I was parented and learn a new way to parent that led to connection and cooperation. I fell in love with conscious parenting. I call it peaceful parenting. I left my venture capital firm that I was a partner of and that I helped co-found, and I became a parent coach. And 9 years later, it's a calling, and I feel like any time I can help change the world one family at a time by helping a parent understand why our kids do what they do, I just feel completely called to do it. And I love showing up here in the tribe. I've been a tribe member since September of, I think 2018, but dates surf sort of fuzzy for me. And I just love being with you all. I love getting the opportunity to work with you and to share my passion and my knowledge in the hopes of helping you with your family, helping you understand your thoughts and where they come from as they relate to your children. And if in some way that helps you lose weight or understand your thoughts better and love yourself more, then I think that's even a bonus. So we are here today for week 3 of 4 weeks. I will be very sad next week when we have to end. I would love to just keep this going endlessly. I would love to do this in this tribe because you all have been so great. And I feel just so energized being with you all, my sisters, my mentors, my colleagues, my support. I do have to give a little shout out to my accountability group, which is Grown Ass Women. And You know, I have found a sisterhood in this tribe that I just, I don't know if I've ever experienced it in my life, honestly. And I just love giving back. So today we're going to talk about sharing space at home while you work with the kids. And what I really want to get into today, so I'm only going to talk about this for a few minutes. And then next week, oh my goodness, you do not want to miss next week. Next week, we're going to talk about fear and parenting. And I'm not talking about like fear that your kid will bonk his head. I'm talking real fear where, you know, something happens and then you immediately in your mind, your kid is like living under a bridge with a shopping cart, right? And so marinating in that fear leads to triggers, and triggers lead to negative reactions in our parenting. So I am really excited. I mean, I'm excited every week, but I look forward to next week. So this week, I want to just touch on some solutions around online schooling. So who here, just show me, tell me who here, I want to get a feel. So I want to make sure that I've got my, that I'm targeting everybody. So who here is doing homeschooling? Who here is doing online schooling? And who here has children that are going back to school or some hybrid model? Can I just get some feedback in the chat box? Okay. Kristen's here. Hi, Kristen. We live in the same area. So it's good to see you here. Okay, so we've got hybrid homeschooling. Some people are doing both. Yeah, we found out yesterday, my 16-year-old is, he is online schooling until September 8th. Then they're doing a hybrid from the 8th to 28th. And then they're going back in person 5 days a week on the 28th. So this is kind of where I want to start today. How many of you, how many of you feel like things are not going well in the online schooling? How many of you are struggling? Tell me that. Yeah, Zoom school sucks. I think that sort of summarizes it pretty well, Danielle. So here's the thing about online schooling that I kind of want to focus on. And I hope that you guys have an aha moment here. So when we send our kids to school in person, what happens when we send our kids to school is we drop them off, and while they are at school, they really are interacting with their village. They're interacting with other people. And we are sort of out of sight, out of mind. They're going about their day. We are letting them work. We're letting the school work their magic, right? And then those of you that actively decide to homeschool your kids, you've made that decision. You have an interest in it. You feel like it's going to really serve your kids, right? And so you design a curriculum, you learn about homeschooling, you might network with other people, you design a curriculum that works for your kids. You know, maybe you have kids that are better experiential learners. So your entire homeschooling is really field trips or focusing on what they're interested in, or you know, you've really customized. That's one of the advantages of homeschooling, is that you're customizing a curriculum that fits you and your children, right? Well, what we're facing right now is online schooling. And that's a whole different ballgame. You are with your kids all day, but you're not deciding the curriculum. You're not teaching them. What you really are is you're, and I laugh when I say this, but it's really true. What we become is we're the online school wardens, right? We're there to just make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, but we don't really have any control over the situation. And it's created a very complicated situation. And our kids can be very frustrated with what's going on, but they don't have any way to express it other than to us. And so what happens is if they get frustrated or they're storming, they're often doing it to us or around us or with us, right? This is sort of what's happening. And, or they're struggling maybe because, you know, like some ADHD kids or sometimes kids are really struggling and they just, they can't successfully move from thing to thing. I was talking to a mom this morning that has 8-year-old triplets and two have special needs. And the way her school set it up is they're doing like, they do 15 minutes of online classroom and then the teacher gives them an assignment and they close out and they're supposed to do 30 minutes of learning themselves. And then 15:30, 15:30. Well, her kids just, they can't make switches that fast. They're struggling to keep up. They're struggling to get back online and the kids are really not doing well and they're melting down a lot. And that isn't even without us talking about you having your own job to look after. And, you know, so there's a lot of us right now that are struggling. And what I don't bring all this up to induce more anxiety. I bring it up because I want you to know that you're not alone and that we're in a new season as parents. We're in a season as moms that we've never been in before. 99.9% of this, unless you're someone who maybe lived in Asia during H1N1, you have not been through online schooling, emergent online schooling in the middle of a pandemic, okay? And what's really important to me that you take away from this is not a character problem for your kids, and it's not a character problem for you, it's a process problem. We have a process problem here. I go back to this language because I remember the first time I heard Corinne talk about it. I think I was at one of the 2-day camps and she was talking to someone about how they had a process problem, not a character problem. It was a person named Amy. And she was saying, this is a process problem, not an Amy problem. You know, Amy's not flawed. Amy's not broken. There's just a process problem here where we need to write a 24-hour plan, where we need to put some reminders in place to drink our water, right? Those are just process problems. And I've been talking about this all week this week with all of my clients, both one-on-one and in groups, that this is, for all of us, a process problem. And that there's a triangle here in the process. Some of our kids are having a process problem, like they're struggling. This isn't the ideal learning environment for them. Maybe there's not enough accountability. Maybe there's not enough socialization for them, right? For a lot of our kids, the best parts of school, particularly if you have littles, but for a lot of our kids, the best parts of school are seeing our friends, riding on the bus, recess, lunch, hanging out together, seeing our best friend in the whole world, being with Mrs. Jones, sitting up front in a class where we really like her, right? Feeling like we're getting that immediate feedback of, hey, you've done a good job today, or getting papers graded and getting a gold star. And all of that has been stripped away. And what a lot of kids have been left with is the worst parts of school. And they don't have that balance. That's a process problem, right? And then we've got the process problem of some teachers just are not, and schools are not set up to online educate. Teachers don't know what they're doing. It's caused some anxiety. Maybe they're not high tech. Maybe they've been teaching in the classroom a certain way, and now this new way came along and it's causing some anxiety for them or some insecurity or some unsureness, and they're not able to bring their best foot forward. That's a process problem. Right? And so our kids are having a process problem, our teachers having a process problem, and we're having a process problem as the parents. Like, okay, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to make all this work. I don't know how to monitor my kid and make sure that they're really paying attention in class, or she's not on her phone all day. Or I've got these, you know, little kids that the idea of 15 minutes on and 30 off and 15 on and 30 off isn't serving them, right? That's a process problem. And I think this is really, really, really important that we understand this so that we don't turn on ourselves, so that we don't think that we're bad or flawed or not a good mom or can't handle this. I hear this a lot right now. I'm not hearing a lot of empathy for ourselves and for our children, and maybe even for the school district. I hear a lot of frustration and anger. And what I think is that we've got to realize it's a season that we've never been in before, right? We're unsure of this. It's a season we've never been in, and we've got a lot of process challenges right now, right? Like how do we all be on Zoom together in 5 different rooms? Or Lisa, I have a 4-year-old and once a day I have an important meeting and I need her to not interrupt me, right? How do we work out the process problems that we're having? I offer this because I feel like when I understand that what I'm experiencing as a parent is not that I'm a bad parent, it's that I have a process problem, it helps me stay neutral. It helps me stay in my higher brain, which is where I'm calm, creative, collective. I can think, I can see a couple steps ahead. And most importantly, when I realize it's a process problem, not a me problem, it helps me not get triggered, because when you're triggered as a parent, you're gonna be reactive. And when a reactive child meets a reactive parent, there's gonna be an explosion 100% of the time. So this is why I feel like it's so important that you understand that what we're experiencing is process problems, not character problems. Are you guys liking this? Is this resonating with you? Give me some feedback in the chat here, if you will. Awesome. Awesome. Yes. Yes. I'm reading comforting. Absolutely. Awesome. Yes. It just allows us to take a deep breath. And the other thing it allows us to do is get really creative, right? Like if I think I'm a bad mom, like I'm not super motivated to find the solution. As Danielle said, I'm hard on myself. I'm inflexible. I want my kid to just get it right and behave. The other problem is if I'm hard on myself, at some point for a survival skill, I'm going to project my character problem onto my kid. Okay? And I'm gonna give you guys an example in a minute here. I'm going to project onto my son. Stephanie says I'm in her head. I am, girl. I am. So let me tell you an example of how this played out just today in my world. And this might help you guys deepen our learning a little bit, and then we'll jump into coaching. So I have a 16-year-old son, as I mentioned, and he's in the room right next to me. Well, he's not now, but he was today doing online schooling, 8 to 3. And I, this morning, had a one-on-one client from 9 to 10, and then I taught, and then I had a meeting from 10 to 11, and then I had a client from 11 to 12, and then I taught a class of a few hundred people from 12 to 2, and then I had some other things. And so I'm functioning in my day. Last night I thought to myself, okay, Lisa, you have a really busy day tomorrow. So you're gonna get up, you're gonna get ready, you're gonna eat at this time. You're not gonna try to put anything on your to-do list. You're gonna try to sail through your day today. Like, you gotta bring it, you gotta show up for all your clients. You're not gonna have a lot of free time. So I have like, you know, all kinds of liquids in my office. I made myself lunch this morning. I put it on the counter. I really took care of myself. And because I really wanted to show up here this afternoon, late afternoon with you all. And I wanted to be like, you know, really able to bring it today. This is my favorite thing I'm doing all week. So I really wanted to be spot on. Yeah, I got my fancy earrings on. I got my lipstick on. So all of a sudden at 10:45 today, while I'm on one of my calls, my son texts me and he says, Mom, can you make me lunch? And I was like, oh, whew, can I make him lunch? I can't make him lunch. I got clients all day. And we're only like day 2 of week 2 of homeschooling. Last week, my husband was home every day and made my son lunch. And this summer, my son took summer school, but he finished every day at 11:30 and he made his own lunch. So right away, I'm like, oh crap, I don't have any time to make him lunch. Oh my God, he's gonna go hungry. And then I was like, well, he can't go hungry. That's unacceptable, Lisa. Then, boom, my mind flipped and I went into, Lisa, you're a horrible mother. I can't believe this. How could you let this go? A good mother would pay attention to this. Like, I started to feel like I was having a character flaw. Like, I am a terrible mother. You care more about other things. You're not making your kid lunch. And then I got so uncomfortable with this that then I started to turn on my son. Because then my brain, in order to protect me, remember, your brain doesn't want you, it thinks it's going to die. So my brain decided it wanted to protect me. So then it went to, immediately it went to, you're not a horrible mother. He's 16. He should feed himself. This is ridiculous. You should just tell him to figure it out. And then my brain went, whoa, 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 slow the bus down. You're not a horrible parent. He's not a horrible, disrespectful kid. My brain went, there's just a process problem here. Oh, yeah. Okay, we've got a process problem. You thought through a lot of the things for today, but because we're new at this online schooling, you forgot about lunch. Dave was home last week. He made him lunch. We're only into day two of this week. Normally, my son would make his own lunch, but he gets a very narrow window for lunch because they're trying to cram everything in. So then I went, okay, this is uncomfortable, but we've got just a process problem. Maybe at the end of each day, before you turn off your work stuff, you need to also put on the to-do list, not only to scan what you're going to do the next day, but what is, when is Malcolm's lunchtime? Because that's the other thing. It changes every day based on some weird thing. I won't even bore you with the details. But he doesn't have lunch at the same time every single day. He kind of has this floating schedule. And I just forgot to consider that somewhere in there, and he really doesn't have time to go in the kitchen and make his lunch start to finish. He really doesn't. He gets like 15 minutes to eat lunch. So I'm like, okay, what we need to do for tomorrow is we need to decide what is he going to eat, and exactly, and basically meal prep. Yes, thank you, Shops a Lot. That's basically what I realized, is that I need to meal prep his lunch, or he needs to meal prep his lunch, and we need to get it all ready, and I need to let him know what it is so that all he has to do is run in the kitchen and heat it up. So I ordered him a sandwich online. Well, he's a big boy, so I ordered him a few sandwiches online that we had delivered. So I fixed the problem short term. And then I went, okay, we just have a process problem that I need to work out for the rest of the 3 weeks that he's homeschooling. And I didn't have to make it mean that I was a horrible parent. I took all the pressure off myself. I didn't have to go through the gyrations of, oh my God, I'm so disappointed in myself. And I, why can't, my go-to always is, why can't I ever get my act together? This is like my old shitty, to use Corinne's language. And my mind is just looking for evidence to go back to old shitty. So if I hadn't realized today that it was a process problem, and I would have gone to old shitty. See, Lisa, when you get your business together, you fail in parenting. When you get your parenting together, you take your, like, I would have just gone, oh yeah, Kristen and I, we share an old shitty. I would have just gone into the shame spiral. I would have put the shame shawl on and I would have made it all about how I was a horrible parent. I would have carried it around all afternoon. I would have beat myself up and I would have really gone to that ugly place. And instead, right away when I caught myself doing it, I was like, it's a process problem and we can fix it. We can fix it. I am committed to a lifetime of continuous improvement in a process problem. And tonight, I will also help my son realize that he has a process problem too. Like, we're gonna attack it together. I'm gonna bring him into the equation and we're gonna talk about it. So that's an example of how we can move away from feeling like we're a horrible parent, like we have a character flaw. I'm broken, I'm no good, I can't do this, I wasn't meant to be, I'm missing the gene. I've already ruined them, right? These are all the things that we say to ourselves to convince ourselves that we're a horrible parent. And then, I mean, it's a beautiful opportunity, I say that tongue in cheek, to then go and have to numb out with food because we feel like we're horrible parents. There's a character flaw. And you're not a horrible parent. You just need to work on your process a little bit. All right. I offer that in the hopes that it was helpful. And now let's do some coaching. So Dina, let's see. I need to get up to my, why have I lost my mind on how to do this? There we go. Now I figured it out. Okay. First thing I'm going to do is change my name because I know you guys know I am not Corinne. We do not look anything alike. All right. So I changed my name and let's see who has their hand raised. We are going to start with, okay. So if you want coaching, go ahead and just raise your hand. And then we'll call on people. I know, Danielle, you want some coaching. All right. So I'm going to start with Danielle. I'm going to promote you to a speaker. I learned how to do this. I feel so proud of myself. I worked the process out, right? It's funny because when I got on today, also another example is when I first got on and the typical meeting wasn't there, I was like, oh, Lisa, you should have done this earlier. You should have. And then I went, whoa, Lisa, we just got a process problem. You just got to find the link. So I must say to myself that I have a process problem about 87 times a day. So I find it funny. I'm like, damn, girl, you got a lot of process problems here in the world. But it is really true. There's a lot to process in this modern world. And then that's without processing a pandemic, staying safe and navigating the world, and online schooling. So God bless all of us. All right, Danielle, talk to me.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. So I'm home with five kids and I have a sixth grader, a third grader, a first grader, and twins that are two. And it's pure chaos. And they're basically all home from 8 to 9 until I take the girls to daycare. But the main issue that I'm having is my 8-year-old just has become so angry and aggressive and hitting me, cursing. I mean, it's not a meltdown because he's intentional. He's like finding things. He's looking around. He's like, did that hurt? He's like, I want to hurt you. Like, I think I have a whole house of strong-willed people. Me and my husband are strong-willed. I mean, it's like, yeah, yeah, there's yelling and there's frustration and anxiety. And it's just so, and this isn't going to go away anytime soon. I can't just like tomorrow, they're not going to call me from school and saying, drop them off, you know? So I think I've been able to coach myself and get out of despair. And, you know, I realized that like I have a broken heart because my 8-year-old is doing this. But I know it's, you know, like what you say, it's like, it's a cry for help. But that's where I struggle is like getting behind it. Cause I try to talk to him when he's calm and I'm like, hey, tell me what's going on with you. You know, do you know what your body's telling you, what your mind is telling you, you know, can you guess? Like, and he's like, shut up. Don't talk to me. I don't want to talk.
Okay. So would you like to heal your broken heart?
Yes.
Okay. Let's heal your broken heart. So here's the thing about strong-willed kids, and 8-year-old boys fit this to a T. 8-year-old strong-willed boys. Strong-willed kids have a need for, strong-willed kids have a need for aggressive play, risk, and conflict.
Yeah.
This is a fact. And if they're not getting it, they will create ways to have it in their life. I want you to feel relief by this news. Okay. And what happens a lot in the world is in the way we used to live, an 8-year-old boy had a lot of opportunity to have aggressive play, conflict, and that kind of interaction. All right. And they would get it at recess. They would get it with their friends at school. They would get it at soccer practice, right? They could have a lot of conflict. They could have a lot of interaction. Maybe he went to karate. There's lots of ways that we allowed these boys to engage in this kind of play that they really need. And then it went away. And I don't know if you were with us last week, but I talked about how it takes a village to raise our kids, and we're now the village. Surprise. You're the PE teacher. You're the karate teacher. You're the, you know, you're the best friend on the school bus. You're the kid on the playground that they want to play capture the flag with. You know, they need that really aggressive play, and they need a lot of conflict, and they need risk. That their brain functions well when they're getting doses of that every day. This is why, you know, there's many reasons why teenagers engage in risk, but strong-willed teenagers really like, they take risk to a new level. This is why some people will have kids that will, you know, jump off the top of the roof and others won't. Some kids have a real drive for a fair amount of risk in their life. So this is the good news. You don't need to have a broken heart. We don't need to figure out what's going on with your kid. He's not storming, so this is different than storms. What we need to do, Danielle, is figure out ways, and I'm going to give you some suggestions. We need to figure out ways your son can engage in this kind of behavior in a way that works for you instead of it being kicking you and hitting you and swearing.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Yes.
Right? So some examples are, so I think, just to be clear, because I know people are jumping in here, what Danielle is describing is different than storming, right? Storming is a different category. She's describing a strong-willed kid that needs to engage in a lot of conflict. And, you know, some of you might have strong-willed teenagers that want to fight all the time. It's because they need to engage in conflict. There are lots of ways to, and I'm happy to provide suggestions. There are lots of ways to engage your kids in conflict that works. So an example might be, you know, your husband and son wrestle every night or in the morning when your son wakes up and like they go after it, you know, they wrestle and your son's like, you know, he's getting all that out. Or you buy him a punching bag and he does some boxing, or you buy him one of those little indoor trampolines and he jumps on that, or you and he go jogging in the morning for a little bit. Or, you know, let's examine this. Why do you guys think when your kids go to elementary school, and I don't know if we have any teachers here, if we do, I'd love to hear from them in the chat, but have you guys ever noticed when kids get to school in the morning in grades like K through 4, what's the first thing they do when they get to school?
They have they dance. Most of
them have playtime on the playground.
Yeah.
All year round, no matter what, where you live, they have activity. What's the teacher doing? The school is working all that cortisol out of their system before they have to go learn. So if your son's getting up in the morning and he's lounging around and he's not getting any physical activity, he's not getting a chance to get all that out of his body, and then it's time to learn, he might have all this pent up energy that he doesn't know what to do with. So his fallback is to battle with you, engage in a power struggle with you.
I know it's tricky because I tried it yesterday. We went to the park and, you know, there's a heat wave over here and I have construction. I have no front yard and no backyard. So that's tricky. So I'm like, grab the scooter. Let's go. At 9:30 in the morning, let's go. And then the minute I come back and tell him, I'm like, no, there's no YouTube. You know, we're going to try to get on our Zoom call. And we're going to try to do our assignments. You know, I hate you. Shut up. You're an idiot. You know, and starts throwing toys at me. So it's basically also when he doesn't get what he wants.
Well, now that's storming and that's something different, but let's stay focused on this for now. I would, at a bare minimum, I would come up with some calisthenics in the morning. Like the two of you get up and he could do some jumping jacks. He could jog in place. You could find something on YouTube. Maybe he could do karate on YouTube. I'm not refuting the fact that you've got a lot of kids and you're already got a lot on your plate, but you're going to have to get creative. You're going to have to find a way I know you are, because, you know, you can put the energy into battling the shut up, or you can put the energy battling, But you're going to have to find a way. Or another thing you could do is engage in some conflict with him.
Yeah. I'll be right there, guys.
Okay. Have an argument over something. Pick something, pick a topic, and just argue with him. I mean, that is...
I love it. Looks great.
Can you take a photo?
That's another way to do it, is have...
Okay.
Have a protected time where you and he are just going to argue about something. My son and I, when he was your son's age, we used to play a game. I'm going to try to describe it to you. Okay?
Okay.
So what we used to do, and I'm going to have to stand up for a second. Malcolm and I, when he was 8, we would line up like this. Malcolm would put his back to me. So pretend the chair is my son. So he would put his back to me and I would put my back to him. And we would push on each other like this. This is for everybody watching. We would push on each other back and forth. Of course, I was stronger than him, so I would limit my pushing. But while we were pushing on each other, we would scream at the top of our lungs. Now, we were always at home when we did this, but we would scream at the top of our lungs, "I am so mad!" And I would start, and I would yell, "I'm so mad that I have to cook dinner every night," while we're pushing on each other. And then he would say, "I'm so mad," and he would say whatever he's mad about. And then we would go back and forth until he ran out of things to complain about. And it was a form of conflict and a form of getting all that cortisol out of his body that really worked for him. So this is another thing you could do. Sometimes we would do this a lot when he would come home from school, when he was like in first grade or second grade, because he just needed to process the buildup of cortisol that was in his system. Emily says, "I'm a teacher, try a resistance band on his chair to kick." Great idea, Emily. If you guys have more suggestions for Danielle, bring it. But whatever you need to do to get that physical aggression, but also engage in conflict while doing it. Let me tell you guys a funny story real quick that will enlighten you. When my son, about 6 months ago, one day, we were having a rough, we seemed to go in like waves. And my son, we had been arguing a lot about something. And one day I said to Malcolm, that's my son's name, I said, "Malcolm, nobody enjoys arguing all the time. Nobody enjoys engaging in this battle. Like, people don't enjoy it." And I paused for a minute. He looked over at me and he said, now, I have a pretty emotionally intelligent kid, I'm going to say. He looked at me and he goes, "See, Mom, this is where you're wrong. And this is what you don't understand." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "There is a group of us in the world. And I think it's probably strong-willed people. We enjoy engaging in conflict. It's necessary to who we are. It's a part of our fabric. You're the oddball who doesn't enjoy engaging in conflict." And I went, "Oh my." Now, call myself a recovering people pleaser. I don't like conflict. I don't like fighting with people. I don't, you know, so for me, I lived in a world, talk about a thought model. I lived in a world where I operated from an assumption that every human being naturally wants to avoid conflict. It was a big light bulb moment for me in realizing that there are actually there's a whole population of people who need it for part of who they are. So when we identify this in our children, let's find a way to give it to them. Here's the secret. Give it to them in ways that work for us, right? So instead of like, "Buddy, we don't need to go there. Let's go here. Let's do karate, yeah. Let's do the resistance band, let's punch the pillow, let's do that game where we're screaming what we hate in the world. Let's go for a run. There's a beautiful way to teach a boy that physical fitness is the perfect outlet for conflict. Why do you think kids are so like into sports from an early age? Competition and conflict.
To work on this. No, thank you so much. I'm willing to put in the work and I want to figure this out. I do. Yeah. I really do. For all of us, for the whole family.
Let me know how it goes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. You're welcome. All right. Now I got to remember how to do this. I got to get my process going here. Okay. I have to unpromote. Okay. There we go. successful. Stacy, let's talk to Stacy Zur. There we go. We're going to get through everybody, so don't worry. And if you want coaching, just raise your hand. There's Stacy. All right. Can you turn your camera and your mic on, Stacy? There you are.
Yes.
Hi.
I think I got it. Hi. So I'm not, my kids went back to brick and mortar school. I have 16-year-old twins. They're juniors in high school. So my question isn't so much about school as it is I have a full contact 16-year-old daughter. She has OCD, anxiety, and depression. So quite the handful to deal with. I feel like I do a reasonably good job of controlling my emotions. She will actually say I'm emotionalist when I deal with her, which I don't necessarily view as a bad thing, but my husband is not. And so when she storms, he storms. And we have these gigantic explosions. And my husband is very old school. You know, I'm the parent. She does what I say. And I'm really struggling with how do you manage that when there's two parents who aren't on the same page? You have a child who not only storms, but has mental health issues. But that's my biggest struggle is how do you manage that?
Yeah, that's tough because, a dominant dad who thinks, you know, the parent should be the authority and the communication should roll one way. And you're enlightened, so to speak, right? I think the two angles I would take in that situation are I would try to help him when he's calm, not in the heat of the moment, but afterwards, when he's calm and collected. I'm going to give you three tools, actually. The first one is I would encourage him to move away from taking her behavior personally. We do this as parents. We take their behavior personally. We think they're doing it to us, right? I love the saying, your kid's not giving you a hard time. She's having a hard time. And it's just an expression. I don't know if you were here the first week, but I talked about how when kids storm and for a 16-year-old, you know, yelling and, you know, picking a battle is often a storm. I call it a storm. I lump everything into that category. And what kids are saying is, you know, I don't know how to ask for help. Well, first what they're saying is, I don't know how to help myself or I would have done it already. I don't know how to calmly ask for help or I would have done it. This is the only way I know how to ask you for help. So if he can see it, if he can shift his perspective, and if he can see it as her asking for help to navigate through the problem, right? The storm is just the symptom. But really, if we go underneath the behavior to the feelings and needs, and we solve for the feelings and needs, the behavior will take care of itself. But if we're so fixated on the behavior, we can't ever get down to the feelings and needs. So that's one thing that I would offer up to him. The other thing you could mention to him over a glass of wine one evening is that, you know, kids model, or kids repeat what we model for them. And she's just, what your daughter is a good learner. And what your husband is saying to her is, in this family, when we get really stressed, we yell. And she doesn't have the brain capacity to discriminate. Do I like that or not? Should I do that or not? Because what he's saying to her is, in this family, when things get stressful, we yell. And so she's going, her brain is going, okay, I can pick up what you're putting down. She doesn't have an opinion about it. She's just, you know, kids are just good learners and they learn what we model. They don't do what we say, they do what we do. So that's the second thing you can share with him to, you know, to try to get a light bulb to go off. And then here's the third thing, which is really powerful. When we have a strong-willed kid, and we work really hard to break them. And, you know, we really could mean the best. We could, you know, maybe your husband was a strong-willed kid and someone broke him and that turned his life around. You hear these stories, right? I was this, you know, I was this awful delinquent kid, and my parents sent me to military school, and they broke me down, and now I'm an upstanding citizen in the world, right? So I understand how they get to this, but here's the problem. In particularly in this day and age, when we break a strong-willed kid, it leaves them susceptible to be broken by other people who in the future may not have their best interest in mind. When you break a strong-willed kid, or you spend a lot of time focusing on breaking a strong-willed kid, the problem is that their brain doesn't go, oh, well, I was broken at home, but now I'm gonna go out into the world and be defiant and strong and speak my own mind, right? They either become people pleasers. Hello, let me sign up for that one.
Yep.
Or they get in with the wrong crowd and they allow themselves to be broken and influenced by them, whether it be a bad boyfriend or a gang or a different way of thinking. They're looking for a home. And so people, I'm not guaranteeing it, and I'm not trying to be doom and gloom, but sometimes for dads, this can be the wake up call, particularly about daughters, you know, and that's why I offered up to you to offer to him. Because if he spends all this time trying to break her, then naturally her pattern could be then looking for a partner that will try to break her, because this is what's known and comfortable to her. And this is what got modeled for her in the the authoritative male role.
So assuming that I can get through to him, which I've been trying to do for a while and limited success, how do I support her? How do I build her up, you know, in an absence of being able to change his behavior?
Well, what we really have to understand about strong-willed kids is that compromise and negotiation are their greatest tools. The greatest tools you can teach a strong-willed kid is compromise and negotiation instead of win-lose, right? So what you're going to want to do is move away from a mentality with her of someone has to win and someone has to lose. Because anytime strong-willed kids feel backed into a corner, anytime they feel forced, they're never gonna back down. They're never gonna submit to someone else's will. It's how they're hardwired. You can beat them, you know, you can force them, but they themselves are not gonna give in and submit easily. So compromise and negotiate.
That is her.
Huh?
That is her. Absolutely.
Well, yeah.
When you back her into a corner,
I have a whole course on strong-willed kids, because if we can understand as parents how they're wired, then the solution and the tools make sense. And they don't feel like we're giving in or we're collapsing or we're becoming permissive. They're hardwired differently than non-strong-willed kids. And if we can just understand how what's important to them, what their priorities are, how they think, then we can parent them in a way that does create win-win through compromise and negotiation.
Perfect.
Okay. Yeah. But really, you know, work at enlightening him, work at helping him see that you're not undermining him. You're not suggesting that he doesn't care. You're not trying to overhaul him. You're just trying to slightly shift his thinking in a way that's going to create connection between a father and a daughter, which is what you want for him and her.
Yeah, and it's just hard because having the twins, he has, our son is very easygoing, and so he is easier to deal with, or easier just to communicate with and everything else. And so he holds her up to that standard, and they're not the same kid. They don't communicate the same way. They don't have the same needs. And that definitely adds to the challenge, I think.
Yeah. I guess the other way I want to offer up real quick that is in your control, the other way to support your daughter is to just really work hard at making sure she feels heard. You know, I love Brené Brown's definition of connection. She says connection is when we feel seen, heard, and valued. So I'm just going to give you an example of what this might look like, Stacey. Let's say that your daughter and husband have just had a blow up and your daughter comes to you and the two of you are hanging out, maybe in your bedroom, and she says, "Mom, I'm so mad at Dad." And you say, "Why?" "Well, you know, he did this, this, and this." Your instinct might be to say to her, "Oh, I hear you, honey, but he's just trying, or he's really struggling." Or and in your brain, you're trying to help by helping her understand what's going on, or help her shift. Or you might even take the tactic of, "You know, I know, sweetie, but if only you would do this, this, and this, or if only you wouldn't battle Dad." Again, trying to help them create, help them get along. That actually takes her further away from feeling connected. Instead, what you want to do is do more of, "Tell me more, honey. Wow, that sounds awful. I can see you're really upset." And have the sentence in there. You don't need to justify, you don't need to explain, particularly in the moment when she's really upset. You know, when she's really, really, really upset, it's just the time to let her be upset and hold space for her. You know, just honor it for her. Now, this could, at the same time, I understand, be wildly uncomfortable for you, right? Like, are you kidding me, Lisa? I'm a fixer. Like, I got to mediate. I got to make this better, right? But it's not working, or you wouldn't be here. And right. You know, we have to get comfortable with our kids' big emotions. And another thing I like to say is feelings are never in conflict, right? So she can be mad or unhappy and feel misunderstood, and your husband can be angry, and you can be uncomfortable, and all those feelings can coexist in a house at the same time. We don't all have to get our feelings on the same page. So that, if you can do that for her, she's gonna feel really heard by you, and that's gonna help regulate her brain a ton.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Good. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Sorry, I don't mean to say. Let's talk to Kate next, and then we'll do Jesse. So let's promote Kate to panelist. Hi, Kate.
Hi, how are you?
How are you?
I love this, by the way. Thank you.
Yay. Me too.
Yeah.
I want this to be a permanent PNP thing. I've got my fingers crossed, but we'll see.
Yes. 100% yes. As a strong-willed child, I really appreciate what you said about that because it's very true. And also normalizing people's feelings and not using, you know, like I was always told, dramatic instead of passionate. Or, you know, you're emotional instead of passionate or something like that. So that really affects kids, I think, in how they, you know, see themselves. But that's not why, right. What I want to ask.
Bossy
you.
Instead so. Of determined, right? Bossy instead of determined.
Correct.
Let me just say as a side note, and I want to see if you can relate to this. Many, many, many strong-willed girls get labeled bossy. And bossy has this very negative connotation, which then... as they mature, bossy becomes bitchy, right? And that's kind of yep. The label you have as a strong-willed girl. And correct. it's not necessary.
Another word is aggressive as well, mm-hmm. instead of assertive. But yeah, so yeah. I missed last week, but I went to the first week and, we started school last week. My son is in kindergarten. And I'm trying to keep everything that you said in mind. You know, this is not normal for him. This is, you know, he's struggling with the stamina of sitting still naturally. Everybody's doing the best that they can. You know, I'm trying to exercise in the morning, which I've noticed that has helped me instead of kind of like blowing up. But what I'm struggling with now is like, it's really impacting my work. And I asked you a question the first week and you said, you know, we kind of need to be okay with like that vacation version of ourselves at mm-hmm. work right now. But I'm Lisa, when I tell you, I'm trying not to like get angry or anything at him, but it's like, I'm constantly getting interrupted all day. And it's affecting like my work and like my teams. You know, I can't be there for them and be there for him at the same time.
Okay.
You know, and it's getting to the point where I really don't know how to do it. I'm good and I'm trying to be accepting and have grace with myself and I'm being better at that. But the logistical thing of like my job suffering is now happening.
Okay. So I'm going to give you, I'm glad you asked this. I'm going to give you some tips and ideas. Okay. So the first thing is, you got to make sure that you're checking in, which I'm sure you are, because he's craving a lot of attention, right? This is what he's doing. One of his needs is attention. And interestingly enough,
yes,
when our kids, particularly boys, so now we're going to do the flip side. We did bossy and bitchy, and now we're going to do the other side. When our boys need a lot of attention, we're very uncomfortable with this as a society. We're uncomfortable with our kids needing. I posted earlier in the chat, someone asked what the core basic needs are. And they're acceptance, affection, appreciation, autonomy, connection, and attention. Now, I'm not talking about you in particular, Katie, I'm talking about everybody. If you have a kid that needs a lot of acceptance, i.e. reassurance, or you have a kid that needs a lot of affection, or you have a child that needs a lot of autonomy, most of us are okay with that. Like that's acceptable. But if your kid is off the chart on attention, a lot of us, like we're embarrassed by that. We're uncomfortable. We don't know what to do. It's almost like a sin, or it's a flaw that is like, oh my God. I mean, seriously, we're wildly uncomfortable with a kid that needs a lot of attention. We get embarrassed in public. We're like rolling our eyes, like, can he please just stop talking, right? And so I just want you to see that that's a trigger that's going on, okay?
Potentially. Yeah.
All right, so let's say we've moved you past that and now you're in acceptance that, okay, my kid needs a lot of attention. So what this means is that you have a high switching cost. You're probably someone who in the past, when you're working, you like to work, and when you're parenting, you like to parent. And now, again, new season, you're being asked to constantly switch back and forth, which is hard and distracting and not the norm and is exhausting. Switching costs are really tough, but it's what's being asked of you. So what we need to do is you need to plan instead of just waiting for him. You need to plan the switching costs. You need to fold it into the schedule. So it might be like 10 minutes every hour. You guys stop what you're doing and you engage together, not around school and how he's failing at school or not sitting still, but like you fill his attention cup, just the two of you. I said this last week, I think I said it last week, schools, and again, the teachers that are here can back me up on this. What schools do, what kindergarten teachers do, is they bookend learning with fun. Fun, learning, fun, learning, fun, learning. So it's not practical to take a kindergartner and stick him in a chair and expect him to learn nonstop for 3 hours. Now, unfortunately, that's probably in contrast to your working style. Most of us, when we work, we want to put our head down and work. You know, we want to just power through the to-dos, check them off, be done. But this is where we have to, you know, we have to work on our process, Katie. Because the process isn't working. So another thing you could do, so book in the fun. Another thing you could do is play a really fun game with him that I made up, okay? So the fun game works like this. This weekend, or tonight, or tomorrow, I want you and him to, I want the two of you, I don't know if that was proper English, you and him, I want the two of you to go to the grocery store or wherever, Target, let's say Target, and I want you to get a piece of paper, and I want you to get some stickers. And I want you both, if the paper could be red for a reason, which I'm going to explain in a minute. You take a red piece of construction paper, you put mom on one piece and his name on the other, and then I want you to decorate it, stickers or whatever he's into. And what this piece of paper is going to represent is when this is up on the door to the office or the kitchen or whatever, this means I am in a really important meeting, and unless you're bleeding, a bone is hanging out, or the house is on fire, you don't interrupt me. Now it's important that you have one and he has one, because we're playing a game, and the game is,
okay,
you're only going to pick this one or two times a day, but this is going to be when I really need you to let me work. Okay. And he's going to get one too, that he's sometimes going to put up, and you're going to be like, oh, well, tell me your son's name.
Aiden.
Oh, and you're going to be this dramatic and do this. Oh, I really want to interrupt Aiden, but I see his red sign is up. So I'm not going to do it, because I'm not bleeding. I don't have a bone hanging out, and the house isn't on fire. And then you're going to leave the room, because we're teaching him the process of when the red sign is up, don't interrupt me. Then you're going to do two more things in this game. You're going to get like a bunch of stickers, and you're going to make a sticker chart. And when Aiden gets 5 stickers for not interrupting you, you're going to like go order Chick-fil-A or something, or go to the park or whatever. Shouldn't be okay. Rewarding our children with food. So scratch the Chick-fil-A, but whatever. He gets a toy from the dollar store. Okay. Because so now we've got a game, we've got the rules, and we've got an incentive for Aiden. Okay. And then what you're going to do is you're going to both practice this game before you actually need it, so that you're correcting all of his mistakes and you're getting him situated on the rules of the game before here comes that important team meeting that you really need to engage in, where you really need him to leave you alone. And you're going to make it really fun for him. You're going to make it rewarding and fun and exciting for him to give you some space to complete your important work.
Okay. And you said we're just putting like our names on it with like fun stuff. Like,
yeah, I mean, you could explain whatever you want on it. But the point is that you have one and he has one, and they're not the same one. And like he doesn't really need one. But if you do only you, then it feels like, what do you mean? I want to play too. So we're making it a game. Right. We both get pieces to the board, you know?
Okay.
But 5-year-olds are wired in the world for one thing.
Fun.
F-U-N.
Fun.
So I'm sorry, but he doesn't care that you have important. I know. I'm sorry.
I know.
I wish he did.
I know. I know. And I know it's nothing that, hi buddy. I know it's nothing that I can control, or mommy's on the phone. Okay. Mm. Sorry. Hence example, real life example.
This is not a time when he can't, but this is not a time to be stressed, right?
Right. I think, what was I saying? This is what happens. I think that I'm better now, like after your first week, I think I'm better at like the understanding and the acceptance, having a little bit more grace. It's now like the actual like logistical process. Like you said, like I need to fix something or do something different, or because this is not sustainable and it's not going anywhere. We're not going anywhere. So
you have like a schedule in your mind of, you know, are you know how we do 24-hour plans? Are you doing basically a 24-hour plan? This is what I learned today, is that I need a 24-hour plan. For I can't just, you know, up until last year at this time, my son would get in the car and go to school at 8 a.m. and he would come home at 3. And between 8 and 3, all I had to think about was myself.
Right.
I didn't have to think about when is lunch and what is he doing for lunch and did he get up this morning? Is he on the computer? Right. I didn't have to think about those things. But now I do. It's a new season.
Right.
And now I do. So what I learned today in my process problem is that right next to my P&P plan, maybe I need a kid plan. Where I'm like, okay, because my son's situation, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, he goes to school 8 to 3. Wednesday, he goes 9 to 3. And Friday, he goes 8 to 1. Right? So I just need to remember what day it is. What are we doing? What do I have for food for him? What is he doing after school? I need to do a P&P-like plan for my son for the next day. Not to micromanage him, but so that I don't get myself into another process problem where he says, hey, can you make me lunch? Or if I've decided that he needs to be completely in charge of his own lunch, then I need to announce that to him. And I need
right,
to
be so consistent with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I have his like daily plan with the school. Like you said, it's like one day, it's one thing, you know, the times and keeping track of that. But I think you're right. I just, it's a little bit overwhelming trying to like do, you know, mine plus my meetings, plus my husband, plus him. And I know other people have more kids than me. So I know it shouldn't be complaining about that, but I mean, it's just a little bit overwhelming sometimes, okay. You know, and I'm trying
to, yeah. Let me ask you this, Katie. I'm glad you said that. You are helping everybody so much. I'm so glad you came today. So let's imagine this. Imagine now you're very good at your job. So imagine if tonight you got out an Excel spreadsheet and you had, you know, across the top, Monday through Friday, and down the side, you have you, son, and husband. And tonight you sit down and you put in, tomorrow's Thursday, you put in Thursday, okay, my son is school, I'm just gonna make stuff up from 8 to 1. Yes. And he needs to be online from 9 to 12. And you put in when the school expects him to have lunch, and then you put in roughly your calendar for the day. Okay, I need to be on Zoom at 8, 10, 12, and 2. Let's say, I'm making this up, of course. And you look at it and you say, what's that?
That's about right.
Okay. And let's say you look at Zoom, the calls, and you're like, all right, the 8 and 2, I'm just a passive participant. So I can have the Zoom on, have it on mute, you know, have my camera off, and I can be listening attentively. But also if I need to answer a question, I can do that. But the 10 and the noon call, I need to be game on. All right. So then you highlight that and you're like, okay, this is a problem because I've got a call at noon that I need to run and my son has lunch at noon. All righty. I need to be aware of this. So I'm going to need to check with my husband and see if he can be hands on deck at noon so that I can do the meeting. And what I'm also going to do is set a timer alarm in my phone to go off at 11:30. So at 11:30, I'm going to make Aiden lunch so it's ready. And I'm going to spend 15 minutes with him from 11:45 to 12 o'clock to fill his attention cup. And then during that, I'm going to talk to him about how at 12 o'clock, I'm going to put my red sign up. And that means I can't be interrupted. And if he can successfully do that, he's going to get a sticker. That's creating a family plan for Thursday that is very similar to P&B, right? Okay. And you could even print it out, put it on your desk, set the timers in the phone, have lunch decided. And that's going to go a lot smoother than just crossing your fingers and hoping Aiden leaves you alone at noon. As my husband likes to say, hope is not a strategy. I hope I lose weight. That is not a strategy.
Oh, you're right.
I don't know there's any P&B coaches here other than Dina, but can I get an amen on that one? Hope is not a strategy. We've all tried hope. Amen. That shit don't work, right?
Right.
And so we have to do the same thing with our parenting, online schooling, and working at home. Hope is not a strategy.
Action.
So action. What I would love for you to do, Katie, is every night, your last act before you close out work for the day is you open that Excel spreadsheet and you do your parenting plan. Or what we need a name for it. I don't know what we're going to call it, but we do our survival plan for tomorrow on how are we going to get an alignment so that, or maybe you go, okay, you know what? Today's the day I don't have any meetings that I need the red sign. I can just kind of let things flow naturally. And then the next day you're like, oh, but I do have a meeting. I have a meeting with my boss at 1 o'clock. So I need to make really sure. And, or maybe you're like, you know what? I have a meeting with my boss at 1 o'clock. I'm going to make sure my husband can watch Aiden at 1 o'clock. And I'm going to get in the car and drive to a Starbucks parking lot and do the Zoom call from my car phone with a nice yummy drink while I'm alone. So I don't have to get stressed about Aiden interrupting with my boss so I can show up and be fully present. These are the tips and tricks you're going to discover when you're working out your process by putting it in Excel the day before.
Amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, I like it.
That's amazing. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let me know how it goes, okay?
I like it a lot. And I I will. I think it's also important to note that you're saying it just for like do it on the day before instead of a week, because then it's less overwhelming.
Yeah. And things are moving, targets are moving, you know, meetings change. You got to see like also, yeah, I don't think it's worth doing. Yes. Totally overwhelming to do it a week before. Totally overwhelming. And I think that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Let's see. Dina asked, should you keep a certain timeline to put up the red paper? Yeah. You definitely can't do it all day because the kids are going to get worn out on it. I recommend that you only do the paper for the really essential meetings where you're presenting or you're leading or you're with your boss or you're with a client. So I wouldn't have it be more than an hour or two all day, honestly. The less time you can put the red paper up, the better it's going to be. But the red paper, because sometimes we confuse our kids, right? Like in the situation we gave with Katie, where she's got an 8, 10, noon, and 2 o'clock Zoom. What a lot of parents will do is they'll say to their kids in the morning, you know, hey, Dina, honey, I have a meeting today at 2 o'clock and it's really important. And I really need you to let me do the meeting. Well, I promise you by 2 o'clock, your kid's forgotten and they really don't care. Here's the thing. They're selfish. They don't have a fully developed executive function. They don't have a fully developed prefrontal cortex. So your kids absolutely, absolutely do not care about your 2 o'clock meeting. They don't know what a meeting is. They don't care about it. They're not trying to be assholes, to quote Corinne. Their brain doesn't work like that. And if you tell them something like 5 minutes later, they forget it. So you can't tell them at 8 o'clock in the morning and expect that they're going to remember at 2 o'clock. And also if you're inconsistent, because sometimes they can come into the room when you're having a meeting, they need a beacon. They need a way for their brain to go, oh, red signs up. Oh, that means I really can't come in. But if you make it, remember I said they're hardwired for what? F-U-N. So if you make it fun, now it's a game and I get something if I comply, right? Carrot versus stick. So that's why you save it for the few that you really need it for, like really need it. And the other important component to it is you have to practice before. You can't wait until you have that one meeting with your boss and hope it goes well. Because the first couple times your kids do this, they're guaranteed to screw it up. They probably don't even really understand the rules yet. It's like the first time you play Candyland with your kids, like your 2 or 3 or 4 year old, they have no idea how to play. It takes lots of repetition before they really understand how to play even the most basic of games like a Candyland, right? So you've got to practice before it's go time, basically, is what you've got to do. All right, we're going to talk to Jessie next. So I'm going to cue her up while I'm finishing this. So you don't wait till go time. Practice ahead of time. Do a walkthrough, a rehearsal, if you will. So when you really need them to leave you alone, you really need them to let you get through this meeting so you can concentrate and focus because it's important, then they're going to be ready for go time. Okay? All right. Hi, Jessie.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I want to say thank you for bringing up this stuff about the process problem. That really kind of helps. I think a lot of my issue is balancing work and being a mom. I'm actually expecting my second child in October, so I'm very pregnant right now.
Wow. But, please have it on the 27th of October. That's my birthday.
Oh, well, I think we're having C-section on 14th, so we already have it.
Oh, boo.
Oh, I know. but my son is 3, so it's been very exciting since March. He's been at home just kind of wandering around in the background, destroying things while I work 8-plus-hour days, and my husband does too. So I have a lot of mom guilt I'm working through because he really requires a lot of attention, and I'm used to doing like 100% like work, just like traveling for work and doing meetings, leading meetings, like very like work focused. And now that it's like both at the same time, it's very hard for me to shift gears. So I think the switching costs you were just talking to Katie about really affect me as well. So, but yeah, I just wanted to talk more about like just how I'm just, I have probably extra feelings because I have a lot of hormones, but
sure.
Just also just like feeling so guilty. And then actually we ended up a couple weeks ago taking him to pre-K part-time. And then my mother-in-law actually posted on Facebook about it, of course. And now there's even more guilt because now everyone knows that we've done that. And there's a lot of questions, like people like, is it safe? Is it not safe? And so,
okay, well, let's help you, Jessie. First of all, let's get rid of the guilt over taking him to daycare.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to offer this to you. This isn't very much in alignment with what Corinne talks about and even some of what Brooke Castillo talks about. Mm-hmm. When you're making a decision about something like whether to take a kid to daycare or not, there's no right or wrong answer. And the way I know this is because I only allow myself to think there's a right and wrong answer when I can prove the counter positive or counter negative, when I can prove the other point of view. So an example of counter positive is, let's say you and I go to the Price is Right and I get picked and I go down onto the stage and I'm with Drew Carey and he says, Lisa, do you want door number one or door number two? Right? And I pick door number two and I'm really excited. And he opens door number one and door number one has a brand new Lincoln Navigator, which is a car I would love to have. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Now I picked door number two. So then he opens door number two and there's a 10-year-old cow
in my
door number two. Okay. I picked the wrong door. We can see that instantly because we can see what's behind door number one and what's behind door number two. We can see the counter positive.
Yeah.
We can't send your son to daycare. What's your son's name?
Lachlan.
Oh, pretty name. We can't send Lachlan to daycare and then rewind and send him and not send him and know the answer. So there's no reason to fondle right and wrong here because we can't prove the counter positive. You know, I really believe, I have written some articles about this and I post on this on my social media. It takes a village to raise our kids. It takes a village. You know, it used to be when you and I were little, I'm sure I'm much older than you, but regardless, when you and I were little, the village was the neighborhood, right? We'd get up in the morning and we'd go play for the day. And the village was whoever was outside and lived in the neighborhood, which isn't a good or bad thing because sometimes the village was the bully down the street and, you know, the kids that maybe we shouldn't have been hanging out with that talked us into shoplifting at the corner store and our best friend next door. But the village was out there. We'd get on our bikes and we'd go ride for the day. If we were lucky, Mrs. Harrison would throw a tray of sandwiches out the back door and we'd be gone for the whole day. Well, the village has now come indoors and it is very arranged and organized and, you know, I don't know if you were here last week, but I talked about this last week. You know, it's interesting. I find it fascinating to understand the origins. Let me just share this with you all. The origin of this change really has to do with a man named John Walsh. John Walsh had a son named Adam Walsh, who was abducted from his home and murdered. And John Walsh was so despondent about this that he created a show called America's Most Wanted. And around 1984, a brand new network on TV named Fox decided to air his show. And they brought it into our homes Sunday evenings at 7:30. Anybody remember this? And what happened is parents got scared because they were suddenly being educated that the guy down the street was potentially a pedophile, right? Or the sex trafficking happened, or human trafficking was a real thing. It wasn't just some far off thing. So we started bringing our kids closer and closer and closer to us. And now they live right under our wing. There's no more roaming the world. Kids are under our wing, if not literally, metaphorically, right? My son, I have Life 360. I know where he is at all times. I feel the need to know this because, you know, we don't know when something's going to happen. It become a reality. So it takes a village. Now, mostly what we're doing is we're coordinating this village. We're organizing. This is pre-pandemic. You know, you had the daycare and maybe the babysitter, and then he went to soccer, and it took a village. And overnight, the world shifted on its axis, mm-hmm. and you became your son's entire village. Surprise! Mm-hmm. Okay, and we're trying to work it out. We don't have all the answers. Nobody should be judging anybody because there's no manual, right? There's no, remember in the early 2000s when Office Depot was filled with, you know, iPhone for dummies, Kindle for dummies, coding for dummies, right?
Yeah.
That went away. There's no pandemic, parenting in a pandemic for dummies. So you're doing the best you can. You're navigating the best you can. And mm-hmm. if you looked at your son and you said he needs a lot of attention and I need some support in this village and he needs mm-hmm. some activity and you decide to go out and do it, anybody that wants to judge you is just projecting their own insecurities onto you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think there's anything to feel guilty about. We're doing the best we can. You know? Yeah. How does that feel?
I don't know. It's like, I want to let go of it, but it's just hard.
Why? What's holding you back from letting go? Why are you so attached to this idea?
I guess I just worry, like, if it's the right decision, you know, but you made a good point about the prices, right? Those you probably don't know.
What would make this the wrong decision? How would you, like, what is the thing you're measuring this against?
I don't know if it's like a ticking bomb before we get sick, you know, like, I don't know if it's.
But you won't ever be able to prove that, let's say your husband next week, you know, tests positive mm-hmm. for COVID-19.
Yeah.
You won't be able to prove your husband got it from your son. And even if you can prove that, you won't be able to prove that your son got it from daycare. Might be some evidence. Your husband might get it. And then your son might test positive. And the next day, 18 people at daycare might test positive. But that doesn't prove that your son brought it home from daycare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
So you have to really manage. Your brain wants to think there are some circumstances here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really just a lot of thoughts and worries, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, the way you describe it is you've got an intense job and your son needs a lot of attention and you've created an environment where you can go back to that village where you're getting the support what I also heard, let me ask you this, Jesse, what I also heard you say at the beginning is, I think this is the real issue. So let me ask you about this and invite you to be vulnerable. So what you said in the beginning was, I feel guilty that he's home all day and I'm working so hard. And he's, you know, kind of wandering around in the background. And then you also feel guilty that he's at school. So why do both scenarios make you feel guilty? What do you really feel guilty about?
That's true that they both do. I don't know. I think it's just like, I'm afraid that it's the wrong decision. And I watch the news a lot every day. They're like, oh, another kid got COVID because they went back to school. And it's like, I just have to remind myself that they're taking a lot of precautions and I was okay with those precautions that they're taking. And that's why we decided to do it.
Well, so. I think that for every piece of evidence, the news, first of all, let me say the news is full of a bunch of liars.
Yeah.
What didn't you, okay, well, let me say it this way. Hope nobody here works for the news. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you a liar. Let me adjust it this way. This is what I figured out. I gave up the news in 2011. And I'll tell you why I gave up the news. I go on once a day to like Google just to make sure the world isn't ending, Yahoo. But I'll tell you why I gave up the news. I gave up the news because the news wants you to believe they're reporting on circumstances. I'm gonna use PNP language. The news wants you to believe they're reporting on circumstances, and what they're reporting on is their thoughts.
Yeah, that's true.
And it would be one thing, like when you watch a sitcom, you know a sitcom is writer's thoughts. So you go into it knowing that. But what the news pretends is that they're reporting circumstances, facts, but they're not. They're reporting, so when a news reporter says, four more kids at Johnny Joe daycare got COVID, they don't know that for a fact. That's a thought. They're looking at circumstantial evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they're reporting on that, and they're doing a disservice in that they're reporting it as though it's a fact when it's really a thought. And you're buying into it.
That's true. Yeah. Because I was okay with the decision, and then all this stuff started coming out about all the cases at the schools and how some kids got it and some kids died. And my phone needs charging.
Yeah, I mean, But for every article, well, it's funny because I was reading an article last night that was talking about how kids between the ages of 3 and 5 years old, actually it was 3 and 7, are the perfect kids to go back together in the classroom because the rate is low. Kids need that in-person experience to learn. They typically are able to keep their masks on. The real rub with like high schoolers is they may not keep their masks on, but also if we send high schoolers back to school, the real challenge is we're going to give the high schoolers the false illusion that the problem's been solved, and then they're going to socialize together at like parties or outings where they're not going to have masks on.
Yeah.
So the spreading of the COVID isn't necessarily going to happen at the high school, but it could happen because we've normalized their brain that they can go back to their old activities, whether it's meeting in the parking lot of McDonald's or it's going to a party. And those are the activities where the kids are not going to have the masks on.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's true. My son's really good about wearing his mask, and they would do it at his school. So that was one of the reasons we decided to do it.
As someone also said, the news only gives one side of the story. They like to sensationalize and focus on the negative. So they like to tell you the thoughts that that skew towards negative.
I think I should probably turn off all the notifications.
Let me share this with you. Right when I discovered Peaceful Parenting, I heard this quote, and I've looked many times to see who the author of it was. I've never been able to find it, but I love this. So let me share it with you. Guilt is the enemy of the effective parent. Someone write that in the chat box. Guilt is the enemy of the effective parent. When we're bogged down in guilt, because what guilt does is it triggers us. And when we get triggered, we're going to have an explosion, meaning a storm ourselves. And it takes us out of the present. It puts us in judgment. It takes us into the past. And we're not allowed to come and be fully present. I promise you that 10 minutes of presence with your child is better than 8 hours of guilty parenting. What our kids really want is they want us to come and be present with them. Whatever time you're spending with your son, be present.
Yeah.
And guilt prevents you from being fully present. You know, it's like, have you ever had a friendship where, or had a situation where like, you know, a girlfriend called you and, or let's use this scenario. Let's say you have a friend and like her dad dies and you decided at the last minute not to go to the funeral. And then you were going to send a card and some food and then kind of time slipped away. And then like, then you never sent anything. And then one day you realize, oh my God, I never did anything for Lisa when her dad died. Oh my God, I'm the worst friend ever. And the guilt starts to build. It's kind of quiet, but it's there. And then all of a sudden you see this friend one day at the park and you're just like, oh my God, I never did anything for her when her dad died. And then suddenly you're standing there. Now you're, and instead of like just coming clean and being like, Lisa, I am so sorry. Right. Mm-hmm. We don't, because we feel guilty and guilt wants to hide, right? Guilt and shame like to hide in the dark corner. So then you're with this friend and instead of getting out in the open and addressing it and apologizing, everything gets awkward. And like, she's talking to you and maybe she's not even thinking about it. Right. She's like trying, oh my God, Jesse, it's so good to see you. Give me a hug. How have you been? Tell me all about the baby. Are you excited? Were you planning it as a boy or girl? What are you going to name it? And she's totally being present with you and trying to engage. And you're being all weird because you feel guilty, right? Like, oh my God, I can't tell her about the baby. I can't be excited about this because, you know, because I didn't do anything for her dad's funeral. And you get all weird and you can't be present with her and mend and move on. So then when you leave, she's like, wow, that was kind of weird. I don't think Jesse really likes me because she was being weird when we were together, right?
Yeah, I could totally see that, yeah.
This is how we show up as parents when we allow guilt to run the show. Mm-hmm. We're not present with our kids.
Right.
So, you know, that's a motivation to get over the guilt.
Yeah, so you can be and that has really affected, like, going to school, like I should be excited for him, you know, but I've been kind of just scared the whole time.
Yeah. Dina asked, Lisa, do you think mom guilt is often fueled by a fear of judgment of others? I think that, yes, to some extent, that's what our brain thinks. I think really when we fear judgment of others, we're really projecting our own insecurities onto them because, you know, if I'm worried that someone's going to judge the earrings I'm wearing, let me tell you guys, I rock these earrings. Like, these are my favorite earrings ever. So if someone was like, if I heard someone say, you know, oh, she should totally not wear those earrings on camera, I wouldn't even pay attention to it. But if someone judged something that I am insecure about, then it would stick with me. Because we only really feel the judgment when it taps into already insecurities that are there, which is why I asked Jesse, what's really going on here? Because she said, I feel guilty that he's home in the background destroying things. And I feel guilty that he's at daycare, which made me wonder, okay, what is really going on here? What is the insecurity really about that the guilt is getting projected onto? Right?
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know, Dina, if that answers your question, but that's, and you know, we feel so responsible for our children, almost to a flaw, that it's, that we, not to say we shouldn't care for our children, right? But we feel so like we're going to get some big report card at the end of raising them that it's like we're almost constantly scanning the universe for that ongoing report card. And there is no report card. Our children are souls who are coming to earth to have their own human experience. And we happen to be in charge of them for a certain period of time to guide them. They are not our property. They're not a show dog that we're taking out into the, you know, the kennel club show where we're gonna parade the dog around and we're gonna get a score at the end. That is not how this works. They are not our possession in which we're going to train them and then get a grade. But we're roaming the earth constantly looking for it's almost like a mid-semester grade. You know how when we're in school, there would be like a progress check. Like, how am I doing? And so we're scanning constantly for that feedback of how am I doing? And it's because we feel like we own these kids or they're a reflection of us. They're their own soul. You know, your son is here to have his own experience.
Yeah.
You're just his guide for a certain period of time. You're not responsible ultimately for the good and you're not responsible for the bad. You're a guide and influence helping his soul progress through his journey.
Yeah.
So hopefully that'll release some of the, you know, knuckling we do when we're parenting. That when I say that to people, what I hope is to release some of the white knuckling you're doing. All of us, right? I started to white knuckle today about the lunch. And then I went, oh, I don't need to white knuckle. It's a process problem, right? Mm-hmm. You're just working on a process problem, Jesse.
Yeah.
What serves my son the best during the day? I'm just trying to figure it out. And I'm trying a bunch of stuff. I've got a process problem. I had plan A. I dropped him at daycare every day at 3. I picked him up at 5. The rest of the village raised him. While I was away from him, I did all my work, right? I had a process mapped out, a flow. Mm-hmm. And then COVID-19 showed up and it disrupted. And now I'm just working on a new process.
Right.
For what's going to serve him and me. And nobody gets the process right the first time.
Yeah.
It's just a process problem. You're not a bad mom. There's nothing to feel guilty about.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for asking that. I'm sure a lot of people really benefited from hearing us interact. So thank you for doing that. Very powerful, Jesse. And good luck with the baby.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, let's see. Does anybody else have their hand up? Anybody? We'll do a last call. This has been fabulous. You guys have asked some terrific questions. We've interacted well in the chat box. Anybody? Oh, Bethany. Okay, let's promote Bethany. And Bethany, ooh, what is that? Bethany, what is that?
It's Ireland, so.
Yes.
And I'm not really in San Francisco.
You're keeping it fresh for us.
Trying. It's just my standard Zoom background that I don't know how to change.
Gotcha. Do you ever have any problems? Because what I heard is when you put that virtual background up, sometimes it makes the Zoom glitchy. So I'm curious, do you ever?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's why I've never done it. This is actually a sheet. It's a sheet from... Amazon that I put up with some polls. It's
it
not
looks
really wood.
Very authentic. Oops, sorry.
Yeah.
It's very authentic.
I know it does, doesn't it? But I wanted to do the virtual background. I've just never done it because I heard that the background takes up more bandwidth and it can make the call glitchy.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow. Well,
Tell me.
I have a quick question. So I have two children, a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old. They're both girls. And they're both strong-willed kids, but I think I have a better kind of handle and understanding with my 17-year-old. And my 13-year-old is pretty determined and likes to do things her own way. I think she's trying to kind of figure things out on her own. And we've been really pretty quarantined since, you know, COVID hit. Like, we haven't gone out. We haven't really done much with anybody. And so now school is starting up again, and the 13-year-old will be in school 5 days a week. They're going to be in small classrooms. So, and she is the kind of kiddo who really needs a lot of physical activity to just work her stress out. Okay. And she loves video games, loves video games. So, we have her currently signed up to do this outdoor soccer club thing with a coach she loves, but she doesn't want to do it. And she told me not because she's anxious about COVID, but because she is worried that she's not good enough. So she has this inner voice that I'm not good enough, so I can't do it. So I'm not willing to try. So I don't want to push myself.
Yeah.
And I think that, that worry and that anxiety, I can see it like moving forward and snowballing. I'm just trying to find the right balance between pushing her so that she can push herself beyond this anxiety and worry and allowing her the space to do what she feels she needs to do. like, it's just a hard, like, dealing with an anxious child is just hard. Like, I don't want to enable her. Like, she loves the sport, she loves the coach, but she doesn't want to do it because she's not good enough. I'm trying to find the right balance. So.
Okay. So, yeah, you have a very classically, you've indicated you have a very classically strong-willed child. You're 13-year-old. Mm-hmm. So one characteristic about strong-willed kids is they're experiential learners. They only are willing to learn on their own. You can't tell them. You can, and in fact, yeah, the more you tell them how to do something, the more you irritate them. So this is the clash of my husband and son. I have a strong-willed husband. I have a strong-willed son. My husband wants to help my son, you know, by guiding him so he doesn't make the same mistakes my husband made. Right. And my son basically wants to give my husband the middle finger, not literally, but metaphorically, because my son is like, I don't care, Dad. I want to figure it out on my own. My son's favorite thing to say is, I want to figure it out on my own.
Right.
So experiential learners, and this can be the challenge in a family, because it can be painful for us to watch our kids make the mistakes that we know if they just would listen to us, we could prevent it from them.
Right.
So one of the secrets to experiential learners is, how can you help them have it be their idea? And it's usually through a lot of conversations and support. Okay, so your daughter loves soccer and she wants to be great at it. She only wants to do it if she can be great. So one of the things you could talk with her about is, what's the definition of great? Like, what does that look like? And what would it take to be great? And you can also profile for her, you know, strong-willed humans that have had to learn, you know, it's basically transitioning her. And you might, if you don't know about it, you might want to look it up. It's basically learning about Carol Dweck's work. I teach a workshop that I have on growth mindset. So what happens a lot of times is strong-willed kids get rooted into fixed mindset, which is, if I can't be great at something, I don't want to do it. You know, and what we have to help them understand is that the joy is in the process.
Right.
And we have to do this with a combination of letting them experience it for themselves, but also supporting and guiding them, you know, and really trying to let her see, well, what is the definition of great? What would that mean for you? How can we baby step our way in there? What do you need to do to get ready? What would help you feel more comfortable? And then it's also helping her recognize that even if she was going to be great at soccer, the tryouts might still be anxiety inducing.
Right. Yeah, she's already on the team. She just, like, there's people that are so much better than her that she, like, she hates going to practice because she's like, it's hard to run, it's hard to do this, they're so much better than me. And I'm like, how are you ever going to get better if you don't practice? Like, you've done nothing for 6 months. Of course you're not going to be right in the same place. So.
Okay. So instead of having the conversation go in that direction, what if we took the conversation in the direction of, what are the things she could be great at in practice? Well, it doesn't require any physicality to have a great attitude.
Right.
It doesn't require any physicality to be on time or be the first one on the field with your cleats on. Like, there are other ways that there are other categories. This is why I want you to really dig in with her. Like, what are some other ways she can already feel successful while getting back in shape?
Right.
It's helping her reduce the cortisol production in her brain so she can stay calm and grounded.
Right. I'm taking notes.
Yeah. Good. Good.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, we'll give it a try. Is that helpful?
Yeah. Can you just say the name of that person with a growth mindset? Do it. Just Google growth mindset.
Yeah. Her name is Carol Dweck. She is a professor of psychology at Stanford. She has a TED Talk. She has a book. You don't need the book. Just go watch her TED Talk. It's about 30 minutes long, and it'll totally help you understand fixed versus growth mindset.
Yeah, I just can't get her, my youngest, to engage in anything like that. Like, I don't know.
You watch it, not her. You watch it, and then you practice teaching her growth mindset without her realizing you're teaching it.
I've got to do this, like, undercover, a subversive.
I'm telling you. Let me just tell you a story.
Yeah, so
sometimes, sometimes my husband will, I have to talk a little softer because my kid's in the next room. I have a son who plays basketball and he's really into it. He's hoping to play in college.
Nice.
And so far he's got the height and the talent. He shows a lot of promise. And it's really, I mean, he works really hard at it. Like he's up at 5 a.m., 300 baskets every morning before school. Like he's really got the drive. But he doesn't like feedback. And he absolutely will not take feedback from my husband, who is a basketball savant. So sometimes my husband will, and my husband gets so frustrated. Why won't he just listen to me?
I know so much.
I study his game. I study the game. I've got ideas. I've got suggestions. And my son's like, nope, nope, nope. So, you know, sometimes we feed the suggestions to my son's coach. Can you direct Malcolm this way? And Malcolm will come up from, coach said, you know,
And does that work? Does that work?
Now, what we don't do is go, uh-huh, yeah, we agree, or we don't say we fed it. We go, really? Well, that's a great idea. Or sometimes my husband will tell me what Malcolm should do. And I'll do this whole, you know, I don't know much about basketball. What do you think about blah, blah, which I do, but I just, what do you think about blah, blah, blah? And my son will be like, no, mom. Okay. And then later that night,
he doesn't.
My son will say to my husband, I think I should do blah, blah, blah. And Dave, who fed the idea to me, is like, really? Now I had to tell him. Yeah. Dave's like, Malcolm, that's a great idea. Yeah, you should do that.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Because they're experiential learners.
Yeah.
And they're not, it's very hard for them to take advice, especially from their parents.
So do you think it'd be, Do you think it'd be better for me to have the coach maybe talk to her a little bit? Okay.
Listen, Bethany, you got to pull any lever you can. It takes a village. You got to pull any lever.
Because I'm like, I don't want to like impose, but I mean, I just don't want her to quit because it's hard, you know, because it's what she says she wants to do. Like, I just,
Yeah, so maybe you have the coach say to her, hey, kid, you got a lot of potential. Get your shit together. Figure it out, right? Or whatever. Whatever the coach, I mean, pull the levers that you need to pull. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, it's sort of like strong-willed kids. My husband and I say this all the time. You can't look them dead in the eye. You got to come from the side. You got to come from the side. You can't, you know, non-strong-willed kids, you notice I don't use the word normal, but non-strong-willed kids, man, you can command them. Go do this. Get your shoes on. We're going. Yep. Strong-willed kids, you got to come from the side. Hey, so an example is, let me give you all an example, all of you. If you have a non-strong-willed kid and you're going to take your kid to her best friend's birthday party, you can walk up to a non-strong-willed kid and say, Bethany, get your shoes on. It's time to go to Dina's birthday party. And a non-strong-willed kid's going to be like, okay. If you walk up to a strong-willed kid and you say, put your shoes on, it's time to go to Dina's birthday party, they're going to be like, no. And you're like, are you kidding me? I'm taking you to your best friend's party. I'm driving you. It's something you want to do. You ask me, put your shoes on, right? It defies logic. So instead you walk up to a strong-willed kid and you say, Bethany, if you'd like to be on time to Dina's party, we need to go now. And you need to put your shoes on before we can leave. Or you would say, Bethany, do you want to be on time for Dina's party? Yes, I do.
Question,
Then you've got to put your shoes on so we can go. Another way for little kids is do you want to brush your teeth now or in 5 minutes? These choices are everything. What happens is when strong-willed kids feel forced to submit to someone else's will, they will not back down. And because they have an underdeveloped prefrontal cortex, they can't say to themselves, I'm going to my friend's birthday party. Why don't I just put my shoes on? Because every demand feels like they're being forced to submit. They don't have the, they're not able to bifurcate. And so what happens is we've got to get, choices are like oxygen to strong-willed kids. Choices.
Right.
Choices. And so, you know, this is where you say to a strong-willed little kid, now or in 5 minutes, brush your teeth. Do you want to shower before dinner or right after dinner? It's the secret to peaceful parenting is you offer choices you can live with, right? It's not, I say this all the time. It's not eggs or ice cream for breakfast. It's eggs or oatmeal. They need a choice. If you say you're going to have eggs today, suddenly they hate eggs. And so, and you also can't say to a strong-willed kid, what do you want for breakfast? Too many choices. They can't handle that. They need choices that they can manage, eggs or oatmeal. Shower before dinner or after. They pick after and you say, okay, that means that you can't get on your phone after dinner until you finish your shower. Do you understand that? Yes. Okay. Do you still want to shower before dinner or after dinner? Right? You're giving them, and these are choices you can live with. We're not trying to become permissive parents. We're giving choices. So another way to go about it might be to say to your daughter, what are your goals this year in the season? Like, what position would you like to play? Would you like to be a starter? What would it take to get there, right? It's shifting the conversation in a way that it's experiential for her.
Yep, good point, yep.
Choices,
I like that.
Choices, choices, choices. It keeps their defenses down. Otherwise, they feel backed into a corner without choices. And I don't care if you're listening to this, I don't care if you have a 2-year-old or a 22-year-old. Right? If they don't get choices, what happens is they feel backed into a corner and they come out fighting all the time. So here's what you want to do. You want to give a strong-willed kid choices 80% of the time, right? We want to follow the 80-20 Pareto rule, 80% of the time. Now, obviously, if you've got a 4-year-old and they're about to run out in front of a car, that's not a choice. Do you want to stop and live, right? So this is why I say it's the 80-20 rule. If we give them choices 80% of the time, it keeps the defenses down. It keeps their brain regulated. They can cooperate. And then 20% of the time, you know, we have to say, like, no, you can't do that. Or you need to go to bed now. Or you do have to go to practice. It's not an option to miss practice. That might be part of the 20%.
Right.
So hopefully that's helpful.
Very helpful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Let me answer. I want to answer one more question, and I want it to be the question that Kamisha asked, because I know the answer to this question. So Kamisha, you asked about bedtime, and I'm going to put in the chat box here a resource for you, and it's called Dr. Green's Bedtime Pass. And I love Dr. Green. I've recommended his bedtime pass many times. I want you to follow the link and go ahead and read about it. But basically, Dr. Green makes a little card, and it's your Monopoly get out of jail free card. And you'll read all about it, but basically you give your kids, you make a little card and you decorate it together. And what it is it's a free one-time pass each night for your kids to get out of bed. And they don't even need a reason. They can bring the pass, because what happens a lot of times is kids start to realize that there's something else happening. Like, ooh, they're having fun out there. What are they doing? You mean they don't go to bed? The world doesn't shut down when I go to bed? Ooh, I want to see what's happening. And then they cook up these reasons. I'm thirsty. I need a hug. I had a bad dream. I have to go to the bathroom. And this endless cycle starts. So what you do is you make this special card. And it's good for a one free trip out of the room each night, or a visit from a parent, you know, to come in and give a hug. And you require the child to give it to you at bedtime. So maybe you get it out and you put it on the nightstand. And when the child surrenders the card to you, then that's it for the night. And you basically let them know they've used their one free pass, and that's it for the night. They're done. And I don't really know why it works, and I don't even really know if Dr. Green knows, but I'm here to tell you it works. It's like magic. It's like they've gotten a ticket to go on Magic Mountain, and they use the ticket and then they know they're done. Okay, you said this is happening at 3 a.m. when everyone else is asleep. Okay, that's a different story. Okay, Kamisha, let me see. Can you, I want to talk to you for a minute. So let me promote you to panelist if you can. And if you can turn your camera on. Look at you, you're so pretty. All right, there you are, pretty girl. All right, here's what I want you to do. If your kid is getting up in the middle of the night, I want you on the floor to make a bed with a blanket and a pillow and maybe a little mattress if you have one. I don't want you to make it too comfortable. And I want you to tell your three-year-old, you are allowed to come in the bedroom. Please don't wake me up, but just lay down on the floor and go back to sleep. So they're getting the comfort of being in the room with you, but they're not getting you up and crawling in bed or dragging you back to their bed or wanting to wake up. They're simply getting the proximity. And maybe the first couple nights they need to wake you up, maybe because they're upset. But what I want you to do is I want you to stay laying down in the bed. I want you to look at them. Is it a boy or girl? Boy. I want you to look at your little boy and I want you to say, you're safe, honey, and I love you very much. Go lay down on your bed. And after a couple nights, oh wait, you're on mute. Let's take you off mute. Take yourself off mute. There you go.
So we've had him do it at the foot of the bed because I'm kind of short. We have a king size bed. And so I've just thrown a pillow down there and that hasn't worked.
No.
And it's the crying and nothing is wrong because if he just lays down between us, and it has to be between us.
He goes right back to sleep. This is what he wants. He's working you because he wants to crawl in bed and co-sleep. I mean,
but this is new.
What kid doesn't want to sleep with their parents?
This is new, though. He used to just sleep all night. If we're not home, he will sleep all night in the guest room with his brother. And we would be in a different room and he does not get up. But at the house, he keeps saying, oh, I'm not comfy. Or great. I'm scared of the dark.
Awesome. But I get that you're not comfy. I hear you that you're afraid of the dark. I've made this little bed for you. And if you want to come in our bedroom, you can lay down in the little bed and go back to sleep. I want you to not wake me up. So you can just come in and lay down and go to sleep. And if he wakes you up, I want you to stay laying flat. I want you to soothe him and then encourage him to get in the bed. And I want you to not let him in your bed, even if it means one night of awful sleep. Because what we really, the reason I'm not trying to be mean, but what we really want to do is we want him to learn to self-soothe. So what's happened here is he woke up one night, maybe he had a bad dream or something woke him up, and he came into your room and he got soothing. He soothed himself back to sleep by getting in bed. And now his brain wants more of that. It's like he got a hit of heroin and now he wants more. So what we want to do is we want him to go back to self-soothing. We don't want him to, you know, concoct a story where he's scared and the boogeyman and the dark. And so fine, you can be in proximity to us, but right. You need your sleep. And so does he. Mm-hmm. So what we're working towards here is getting him to self-soothe. So honey, you come right in the bedroom. If you need to come in tonight, it's perfectly okay. We love you so much. You just lay down in the little bed and you go right back to sleep and you just keep at it. And then eventually he'll stop coming because he'll have gone back to the skill of self-soothing.
Okay.
So, Japjeet said, this is what my pediatrician said about my daughter. If I honor her needs at 3 a.m., I'm rewarding her for waking up. I stop rewarding her, she stops waking up. And it worked just like Lisa said. I would lay in bed still and let her soothe herself. Yeah, so you don't want to interact with him a lot. You want minimal interaction with him that's loving. Honey, okay, not a lot of words. Go lay in your bed. You might even practice a couple nights right at bedtime. So you say to him, pretend you've woken up, come in here and cry. And then you tell him to go lay in the bed. Now don't make it too comfy. We just want it comfy enough.
And we have a little cot that I can put up, just the little cot. It doesn't have like what they have in the daycare.
Perfect.
It's like four inches off the ground. There's no mattress.
That's perfect. With a little blanket and a little pillow. And no, as Japjeet says no eye contact, right? But it's dark. You're not, don't turn on the light. Don't sit up. Don't rub his back. Don't get him over to the cot, because that's all you soothing him. And now he's going to want that. I mean, who doesn't want to be soothed? I wake up in the middle of the night. I'd like my husband to get up and rub my back till I fall back asleep. I mean, that would be heaven, right? I'd love to be soothed.
Yep. And then I think I may have caused it, because when daddy was deployed for like 6 months. And so if they get up, he was gone for all of this COVID nonsense. So I've been like trapped, and it's like, okay, if they don't get in the bed with me, then I don't get to sleep. And then I have to function all day and teach and work and do everything else. So I think that maybe that it's that habit that now that daddy's back, it's
problem, like, girl.
This was born out of desperation. Okay.
Okay.
I did not have the tools, and right? I needed the sleep.
Yeah. Kirsten said me too. She'd like her husband to rub her back. Okay. So listen, we're going to go with Maya Angelou. When we know better, we do better.
Yes, ma'am.
So now you know. So if hubby gets deployed again, they're allowed to come in the room. They just have to sleep on the floor.
Hopefully they'll be older and they won't care about sleeping with me anymore.
Well, you never know. You never know. They might revert back. But now you have a tool. They can be in proximity to you. They just need to sleep on the floor. And they need to not wake you up. You need to rest. So again, when he comes in, we're not going to make this super soothing. We're going to be super, we're going to be very matter of fact about it. I love you very much. Go lay on the cot and go back to sleep.
Yep.
And that's it. No more. Don't keep interacting. If he lays over there and cries for an hour the first night, let him cry. I'm not trying to be mean. You're not going to get sleep anyway. But we want you to only not get sleep one night instead of 100 nights. So he lays over there. He cries. He's just soothing. He's working. It's very jarring to a three-year-old to all of a sudden realize you can get up in the middle of the night. It's like, whoa. It's like a developmental hurdle that you like, what? It's sort of like when you also realize that, like, wait a minute, they're staying up. There's things happening out there in the living room while I'm going to bed. It's like soul crushing to these kids, right? And so what we want to do is just, we want him to self-soothe. So again, not a lot of interaction, super simple. Hey, I love you very much, honey. You're safe. Go get on the cot and go back to sleep. Okay. Then he'll start coming in and going right there. And then he'll eventually just, why bother? Just going to go back to sleep. And then he'll be back to self-soothing. This is a very important skill. It is a critical skill for our children to have, is to be able to self-soothe back to sleep. It's important. Growth hormone is released when kids are in deep sleep. So we want children. This is why teenagers should not have their phones in their room overnight, because all that dinging is waking them up and they're getting up to answer it. And suddenly we've got a bunch of like, the equivalent of newborn moms who have had 2 or 3 hours of interrupted sleep and can barely function, right? We need kids that can self-soothe, put themselves back to sleep, go right back into the REM cycle, go back into deep sleep so growth hormone can get released and the brain can develop and they can be emotionally intelligent human beings.
Yep. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Know how it goes.
I will.
I'm like, ooh, I wish I had that shirt. Very nice.
Okay, see you next week. Thank you.
Yeah, good. See you next week. Okay, I think that's a good place to wrap. Dina, don't you think? Anything else I need to do, Dina? Otherwise, I think we'll wrap there. I think I answered everybody's questions. So you've got Dr. Green's bedtime pass. You guys can reach me if anybody wants to reach out to me personally. You can reach me at support@thepeacefulparent.com. Just if you want to give me a follow-up on if I coached you and you want to give me a little follow-up on how things went, I would love to hear that. You can also reach me through my website, which is thepeacefulparent.com, as Dina put in here. So I want to just end with saying that I'm very proud of all of you for showing up here today, for investing the time in your family, whether you're listening to the recording or whether you showed up live, it is awesome. It is awesome for all of us to do continuing education on our parenting. And every time someone shows up and learns something new, I'm incredibly proud of you. and I salute you. What I'd really, really, really love to know as we're checking out today, we'll call this my currency, if you will. I'd love for you to put in the chat box one takeaway that you got from today's session. Just one thing that you're like, wow, I'm going to take that. I'm going to use it. The reason I ask you to do this is for the same reason that we journal and we write a food plan. When we write things down, our brain is more apt to remember it and it deepens our learning. So, and it's also just interesting for me. I like to know what resonated with you all. So as we check out here, as we say goodbye, if you would write one thing in the chat box that really resonated, and maybe nothing did. I hope that's not the case. But and then we're going to meet here next week, same place, same time, for our fourth and final session in this series. And we're going to talk next week about fear and parenting. Whoa, it's going to be so good. I cannot wait to be here with you guys next week. So thank you so much for being here. I'm honored to do this work with all of you. I'm honored to lead you on this journey. I'm just grateful as my sisters that you trust me and that you're here. Dina, thank you for being here with us each week and doing a great job hosting the chat. And I will see you guys all next week. I'm going to leave this on for a couple minutes as you check out in case you want to write your takeaway in here. And then I'll see you guys next week. Take care, everybody.